from high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Exciting show. Exciting day as we get closer to Christmas. It's still early in December, but, man, there's a lot going on. Nobody's in vacation mode. Robert Ford will be with us this hour. Man, he's probably, I think he's the last ambassador to Syria. He was there for 3 years, currently a senior fellow at the Middle East Institute in Washington. Senator Shelley Moore Capito is standing by, West Virginia. She has a new partner in Jim Justice as a senator, who will be the junior senator now. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
And while she didn't say she'd vote for him, Ernst did say she would support him through the process. Other Trump nominees making the rounds on Capitol Hill include Tulsi Gabbard, Trump's pick to serve as Director of National Intelligence, who's faced questions in the past about a 2017 visit to Syria to meet Bashar al-Assad, and Kash Patel, his choice to lead the FBI.
Yep, that's CBS talking about the nominees. Trump nominees on the march on Capitol Hill. We look at the surging support for Pete and Cash and the gains Tulsi made on Monday.
Number two.
It is good that Assad is gone, but it clearly leaves a vacuum, and our jury is out on this group, HTS, and its leader, Jelani, which is a declared terrorist. President Trump and our team are watching very closely.
There you go. Michael Waltz, new national security advisor. Middle East eruption in central Syria as Sunni extremist group seems to be in charge after the butcher Bashar Assad scrambles to Russia. Why all our enemies seem to be the losers in this, especially Iran, what it could mean for the Trump when he takes over.
Number one.
This kid came from a very privileged, wealthy background. I mean, he went to University of Pennsylvania. He graduated number one in his private school class, valedictorian in high school. What was the grievance that he had? Clearly, he has a problem with corporate America.
Yeah, he has a lot, including some back pain, I guess. That's FBI analyst Nicole Parker. Richie Rich, Ivy League wealthy kid, captured in Altoona, Pennsylvania, after the murder of healthcare executive Brian Thompson in cold blood. We piece together this bizarre journey from valedictorian to murderer and his twisted folk hero status, which you got to wonder why people are praising him and talking about how he looks instead of what he did, which was kill someone on the street in New York City, one of the busiest in the country, at a time in which people were pouring in there on 6th Avenue, right across the street from Radio City. Senator Shelley Moore Capito joins us now. She's on Appropriations, Transportation. At least she was ranking member on the U.S. Senate Committee on Environmental and Public Works. Now, Senator, as you go to the majority, where are you going to be next year?
Well, I'm going to be really have some great spots, and good morning, Brian. I'm going to be chairman of the Environment and Public Works Committee, which means we're going to work on dismantling as much of the IRA as we possibly can, including grabbing money that's going out to suspicious groups. I'm also going to be chairing the Subcommittee on Health, Labor, and Education on the Appropriations Committee, which obviously is a very large committee. You know, it's Medicare, Medicaid, NIH, CDC, lots of our health care spending, rural health care, and those things. And then I'm the policy chair in the leadership position, so I will be running the lunch every week where we discuss the important issues of the week and the day and the month. So I have a full plate, and I can't wait.
Well, I mean, number one, with the IRA, it's such a joke, Inflation Reduction Act, which was
right.
It's a joke. They never even meant it to be that. Now they admit it. But are you worried about this money flying out the door everywhere because they've been so slow to hand it out and done irresponsibly? I mean, is there anything you can do?
Well, we are tracking that very closely, and it was funny in the meeting that we had with Vivek. That was one of the things that they were keying on was not so much, well, yes, how much money is going out fast, but how interesting it is that the money has to be out past Election Day, before December, 30 or the end of or January 20th. And we're seeing a lot of this going to the green groups, to the greenhouse gas groups, to some of these groups which are, by their websites, anti-American, anti-police, pro-Palestinian, and we're giving the EPA is targeting them for $50 to $100 million for climate justice. And so a lot of this is just supporting groups that I don't think Americans would support, but also it's just a waste of money. And so we are going after it, and we are going to go after it really hard once we get the gavel.
Well, do you are you convinced? Are they more listening, or do they have an agenda that an agenda might have from the outsider perspective? For example, you know, you could be the best business person in the world, but if you don't understand how Capitol Hill works and the budget process works, you're going to need ramp up time. Do you get the sense they understand it like you understand it?
Well, I think the nice thing is they're both in the very much listening mode and learning. I mean, one of the things I'm concerned about is if that committee goes aggressively, says, and you know, maybe scrapes out bureaucrats at one of the big cabinet positions. Let's just say, what's the legal challenge here? Can you really do it? And then you're into 2 and 3 years of just kind of flopping around. I want to make sure that we're helping them identify things that are going to escape legal challenges and are going to be things they can do right away. And part of that is things like I just mentioned, scraping out all these extra dollars and grant dollars that haven't been committed yet. We can claw all of that back and use it for deficit reduction and government efficiencies.
The one thing, Senator, I thought would be people say, well, Medicare and Social Security, don't touch it. All right, fine. Well, that's payouts. But what about the way you do it? I mean, what about, are there systems in place? Are there software that exists? Are there ways to do things that if you read the biographies on these guys, especially Musk, that they're a master at doing that, consolidating, speeding things up. So if you could get the Medicare payments and Social Security payments out with fewer people quicker, more efficiently, that saves money.
It definitely does, and I've noticed that Musk on his on X, he is really identifying where the waste is and how some of these systems are so old that you're paying to maintain it. It'd be like maintaining an old car. You're paying to maintain the systems that are inefficient and are not built for the future or even for today. And so I think that's a good place to we'll probably invest money, but also. To be a money savings in the end. I mean, I just heard this morning a news thing, and I can't remember who it was. It was not an American. It might have been China. Just built the biggest, fastest AI computer ever, and they don't even really know what kind of answers it can provide. So this is all built for the future. That's what we need to be doing in our government systems. And there's no reason we can't. And so with their expertise, I think we'll have a good leg up on that.
All right. Is there any nominee that's come to your office that you are that you're having trouble signing off on, or that you have additional questions with, from Tulsi Gabbard to Kash Patel to Pete Hegseth? You know, I guess Matt Gaetz, Obviously there was a problem, but
right.
Go ahead.
Right. Well, I mean, not really. I met with Pete last week, and, you know, we got into it. The questions both where is his vision for the DOD, a strong military, a strong deterrent military that's going to be able to fight on two fronts at the same time to reflect what President Trump would want. But we got into some of the personal issues that had, you know, obviously made the headlines, and I think he needs to make his case to the Armed Services Committee, and he will. And I think he's working it hard here on Capitol Hill, one-to-one meetings, which is what he needs to do. I did meet with Kash Patel yesterday, and there again, I didn't really know him. I think he has a good vision for the FBI, but I did have questions about some of the things that were in his book that are sort of inflammatory. So he's also going to have a chance to talk to the Judiciary Committee on his vision. So this is why you do things like this, is so I can, dispel what's,
So you're not set on Pete.
And
it's okay, Senator. I'm just yeah. So you're not sold on Pete yet, and you're not sold on Kash.
Well, I'm leaning yes here. I mean, I'm looking favorable from the meetings, absolutely positive meetings. But I want to wait. I want to let the process move all the way forward. I mean, we haven't even had the FBI background checks and all of those kinds of things. I haven't met with Tulsi yet. I do know her, as I served with her. And obviously, with all this stuff going on in Syria, I'd like to talk to her about her position and, her trips to Syria and things of that nature. So I think, we're supposed to be advising and consenting. So we're in the advice phase right now in talking and learning.
So Governor Jim Justice is now Senator Justice. I mean,
right.
does it help to have somebody in the same party? Will it help you to coordinate it all, even though Joe Manchin's a great guy and hardly a typical Democrat?
Well, I mean, obviously West Virginia is a small state. I know Jim Justice well. Our families go way back, so that's good. And we've worked together a lot as he's been governor and I've been the senator. I look forward to him being here. He came to our retreat that we had last week that I ran and to learn about how we're going to do reconciliation. I think that it won't take him long to get up to speed at all, and I'm excited about having him. In terms of having somebody from the same party, absolutely, we can confer. But I will say this, and maybe this is because Senator Manchin's in his last 2 weeks, but we worked really well together. And sometimes there is an advantage to having an ear in both sides, both caucuses, to be able to feel what's going on. So I'll lose that, but I'm going to gain double with upcoming Senator Justice.
Right. Just real quick, here's Tulsi Gabbard addressing the fact that she – well, she did meet with Assad. Cut 23.
I want to address the issue that's in the headlines right now. I stand in full support and wholeheartedly agree with the statements that President Trump has made over these last few days with regards to the developments in Syria. My own views and experiences have been shaped by my multiple deployments and seeing firsthand the cost of war and the threat of Islamist terrorism. It's one of the many reasons why I appreciate President Trump's leadership and his election, where he is fully committed, as he has said over and over, to bringing about an end to wars, demonstrating peace through strength, and putting the national security interests and the safety, security, and freedom of the American people first and foremost.
Yeah, she did meet with Assad, but doesn't mean she agrees with Assad, is her point. Is those types of questions you had for her?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, just to see what her vision is. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of moving parts here on the global intelligence with what's going on in Ukraine and now Syria and Israel and Lebanon and Hamas. And I just want to see where her perspective is. I just haven't talked to her in probably 4 or 5 years. So it's a good chance to sit down. And she has a lot of global knowledge with her deployments. So, I mean, I like her. I know her. So it's not that I need to get to know her. It's more of what are her positions and where does she think we can go with this and where should we go?
So Syria, as you know, is totally in flux. We have Israel and us bombing different sites there containing ISIS groups and worried about their chemical weapons. But this guy that took over is Mohammed al-Jilani. Now, he in the past has been basically on our hit list. I think we have a $10 million bounty on his head. But he says he's changed. Listen to what he said to CNN, Cut 21.
You've gone through quite the transformation once an Al-Qaeda leader, and now you are projecting this image of a moderate leader and a moderate group.
I believe that everyone in life goes through phases and experiences, and these experiences naturally increase a person's awareness. A person in their 20s will have a different personality than someone in their 30s or 40s.
And they're not talking about retribution. They said, everybody, you can come back as long as you're not the officers are going to be tried. But the men and women who serve in the military are allowed back without penalty. So doesn't sound like the Taliban, although their resume reads like the Taliban.
You know, my reaction is you can say what you want. I'm going to watch what you do. I would not judge somebody that has such a history of violence and terrorist activities on the face of one interview. Maybe he's trying to play nice here because they need money or support or international sympathy. I'm just not buying it quite yet. So I'm going to reserve judgment on him.
True. But here's what's at stake. And I'm not telling you anything, but just for our audience. You know, we got to make sure that Russia and Iran no longer have influence in that country. How do you do that while making sure you're not getting bed with terrorists?
Right. I mean, I think obviously this does weaken with Assad gone. It does weaken Iran. And, you know, I was wondering when Assad shows up in Russia and looks at his wife and goes, look, we're going to spend the rest of our life here in Moscow. I'm sure that, that was a shock to their system, although it was looked predictable from where we were sitting
10 years ago.
Yeah, but yeah, and then the brutalities you see of the terrorists and the human cruelty with these people getting out of prison and stuff, and I'm sure it's just now getting pulled back. But, it's just been so rife with terrorism over there. I don't know who the different sects and groups are. I don't want these guys affiliating with Russia and Iran, and if they're not, then we need to be having open dialogues with them.
Something else. Chuck Schumer, as majority leader with just over the next 20 days, is mounting a last-ditch fight to keep the National Labor Relations Board under Democratic control. He's hoping you guys stop showing up. And then he gets commitments from Sinema and Manchin to vote with the Democrats. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like Republicans are letting everybody down by not showing up, letting them put those judges in place because they got other jobs now from Rubio to vice president nominee Vance. So Schumer's taking advantage of this. Is there any way you could rally the troops?
Yeah, we cannot let this happen. And I will say Vice President or Senator Vance did come when it was the rally cry came out. So we're just going to have to get everybody here, everybody voting. We cannot let this happen at the Labor Relations Board. This is these are black and white issues in terms of philosophies.
Yep.
And if this person gets in, that's another 2 years of locked down, very liberal thought there. And that is a place that can have great impact. So we'll probably be talking about it at lunch today. We got to get everybody here. I'm certainly planning on being here, and I have been here. So I'm not one of the ones who stepped out, but we'll get everybody here, I think.
All right, go get them. Senator Capito, always great to talk to you. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. We're going to come back, take your calls. Then if you want to go inside Syria, we'll do it with the last ambassador there, Robert Ford. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow Podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
That document is currently in the possession of the Altoona Police Department as part of their investigation. But just from briefly speaking with them, we don't think that there's any specific threats to other people mentioned in that document. But it does seem that he has some ill will toward corporate America.
Weapons or anything like that with him when he was arrested?
He was in possession of a ghost gun that had the capability of firing a 9mm round and a suppressor.
Don't you think that this is, you know, we heard about ghost guns and you thought, well, is that going to be that big of a deal? Now it's a big story. Now, like, oh, we could trace where a gun is from. We could see the fingerprints on a gun. When you buy a gun, you got to register for a gun. We need licenses for guns. You need age limits for guns. We need to make sure you have permits to have a gun. Now it doesn't even matter. So if you are somebody with any means or any type of enough money to order to get a 3D printer, you print up your own gun. I mean, you see how raw this was. An engineering student from the University of Pennsylvania with no hunting background or military background making his own gun, unregistered, untraceable. It's going to make it extremely hard to track these things. Another note, it's a smaller part of a bigger question. Number one, healthcare costs and how it's driving people crazy. Number two is masks. We would have found this guy a long time ago. If it wasn't allowed, it wasn't acceptable to wear a mask. And Eric Adams says it's time to bring back the ban on masks. I totally agree. When you come inside, you have to remove your mask. You have to go into a cab. You have to remove your mask. We had a ban in place, and it was removed after COVID. Put it back. Put it back. Take it off. You got to show your face. Make sure you get a shot. And if you want to go put it on and pretend that you're preventing germs from coming in, like you're a surgeon or it's Halloween or something, go ahead, leave it on. But new rules, take it off because too many criminals are using it.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I think that the president-elect's assessment is completely correct, especially in that first part where he talks about how this is really a confluence of events. You have the Israelis just wreaking havoc in taking out Hezbollah leaders, taking out IRGC in Syria, taking out Hamas in Gaza, taking out the Houthis in Yemen, and then, of course, doing that counterstrike against Iran, taking out their air defenses. Iran is extremely weakened, which is why it couldn't come to the aid of Assad. And the Russians are tied down in a war of aggression they chose against Ukraine. And so the Putin and the Russians cannot come to the help of Assad. And that is what it's created, the situation where the rebels could come in and topple the Assad regime so quickly.
So that is Rebecca Heinrichs weighing in, State Department spokesperson, on the difficulties that the Russians and Iran are having trying to hold some type of influence in Syria, being that Assad is now gone. To me, it should be gone, and Iran is hated, and Russia should be. By the way, they supported the blatant bombing of civilians and supported Assad to keep him in power, who they say forced millions from their home in Syria and killed about 500,000. He is now gone for now and is in Russia. With me right now is one of the last ambassadors, if not the last ambassador to Syria from 2011 to 2014. It's our we're very lucky to have Ambassador Robert Ford with us. Ambassador, it's amazing what's taken place over the last 7 days. Can you put it in perspective?
We could not have imagined this even 6 months ago. It is amazing how quickly the Syrian army collapsed, and the challenges now in front of Syria are enormous, but there is reason for hope at the same time.
Right. Iran seems to be, at the moment, the biggest loser, right?
I think Iran is a huge loser, and so is Hezbollah, because Iran can't supply Hezbollah now.
They can't supply Hezbollah. They lost Hamas as an ally. Sinwar is dead. Most of their fighting force is decimated. Hezbollah has been decapitated. And now they lost Russia as a partner in the region. So, and you got to feel as though the animosity towards the Iranian is deep, don't you think?
Oh, yes. Among Syrians, it's very deep. And with Iran being unable now to use Syria as a transit to send help to Hezbollah, Hezbollah's rebuilding in Lebanon will be much more difficult.
Here's what General Frank McKinsey said yesterday, Cut 17.
And you brought up Russia, Iran, Hezbollah. What does it mean for all of those countries and the region?
They all placed a bet on Bashar Assad, and that bet has turned south for them. Russia's interest is maintaining its air base and naval base on the eastern shores of the Mediterranean. So they're going to try very hard to keep that base with whatever entity comes into power in the wake of Bashar Assad's departure. The Iranians need Syria as a land bridge so that they can move equipment into Lebanon in order to threaten Israel. So that's going to be they're going to be very concerned about that. And of course, Lebanese Hezbollah has also propped up the Syrian regime for many years.
So how do you stop the Russians from holding on to that base? The water base and the military base and the port.
So right now, the territory where those bases are is controlled by the Islamist faction, the HTS group, which is on our terrorism list.
Right now?
Right now. That's who controls that area. So the bases, probably, I would assume there are Russian soldiers there, but all around them would be territory controlled by this Islamist faction. The Islamist faction doesn't like Russia for obvious reasons, because the Russians were bombing them. The Russians were bombing their families. So I don't know what the reaction of the HTS group will be if the Russians say we want to stay. And this is one of the reasons why it's really important for the United States in this moment of flux, when things are confused, to have channels of communication, direct communication with the different Syrian players. Everything is up in the air right now. This is when you have the most influence.
Right. I understand the Biden administration is using Turkey. Would you go directly to one of these insurgent groups?
I think in a conflict situation, when things are so up in the air, and the conflict in a sense has ended, and we're in a moment of transition, which could go either way, it's important to have direct communications with everybody who can shape the course of events in a country like Syria.
So you know all the different sects. You know exactly where they are and the strife that possibly is between them. So far, Jelani, who they say is in charge, who says he's in charge, says everybody's okay. I want everybody to stay. No discrimination. No retribution. Is it possible, from what you know, for that to actually happen?
Well, I know that Jelani broke with al-Qaeda and fought bloody battles against al-Qaeda. And he broke with the Islamic State and fought bloody battles with the Islamic State, kicked them all out, lots of casualties. He allows the Christians in northern Syria to conduct worship. Is there equality between Christians and Muslims? No. He's an authoritarian. But I can imagine that, especially in this state of flux and when everything is up in the air, that he will be trying to figure out how to build consensus and support among different Syrian communities. That's why he's putting out these slick PR messages.
Ambassador Ford, it looks like the Israelis have moved up in the Golan Heights. And he said, we're not giving that back at all. They've also taken multiple airstrikes and are trying to, I guess, take out the chemical weapons plant. And there's no sense that the Jolani says, I don't care, I don't need those chemical weapons. Does that worry you, or is that the best way to do this?
Brian, I want you to think about this. This guy was in Al-Qaeda and with the Islamic State, broke with them, issues a message saying, I'm never going to use chemical weapons, and I invite the United Nations and the international community to come in immediately and secure these sites. I will work with you. Can you imagine?
I love it.
Can you imagine Osama bin Laden saying that?
Never.
So that's why we need to have channels of communication. Maybe it's baloney. Could be baloney. But I'd sure want to test. I'd want to test.
I mean, this is all because of Israel. They ignored the U.S. and just took out Hezbollah with that.
Well, it's also because the Syrian army itself collapsed and Syrian people kept fighting it. I mean, Israel deserves some credit, but also a lot of credit goes to the Syrian people.
I give them credit, but if the Hezbollah was at full strength, they probably would still, Assad would probably still be in power, right?
Or there'd be vicious fighting going on right now.
All right. I know you got to run. Ambassador,
yeah,
thanks so much.
Nice to be with you, Brian.
Yeah, let's do it again. I appreciate it. It's good to know somebody who actually knows the players in the region. You know, people have hopes and they got opinions, but then there's a guy that lived there for 3 years and dealt with Assad and the sects and saw where this was going. And I remember when the uprising first started and millions were just forced out and tens of thousands were killed, they said, oh, Assad's going to be gone. Well, it took another 10 years. And now he's gone. So we'll see. We'll see where this goes. So President Trump says, listen, it's not our fight. I love that idea. It's not our fight. And plus, you don't want to be blamed. You guys got to get mad at each other. Get mad at each other. Don't say, well, the U.S. put their hand on the scale. But you do want to establish communication. And the president said, it's not our fight. But it is our fight to force Russia out. And it is our fight to make sure Iran doesn't get additional influence in my view. And to make sure it doesn't become a terror haven like the Taliban, Afghanistan. Susan Page of USA Today said this. I think she's been pretty fair. Cut 19.
A big headache for this White House, but a bigger headache, I think, for the White House that's coming in. And, you know, President-elect Trump has not wanted a foreign policy presidency. He's talked about a domestic agenda. But I don't know that he's going to have the option to do, as he said, to just stay out of what's going to happen in Syria. Iran's not going to stay out. Russia's not going to stay out. And he faces a world where there seems to be turmoil everywhere. Ukraine, South Korea, instability, even in France and England. So this may be a bigger part of his presidency than he had hoped.
Yeah, but France, this is also some news. I'm glad you reminded me, Susan Page. Germany and France have started to talk with this El Nusra group, which Jolani heads. So you heard the ambassador for it. He's like, well, of course, we're not going to sign off on it. But the fact is, he says, get rid of the chemical weapons. I did not know he was in pitch battles with Al-Qaeda and ISIS. That shows he's willing to fight for his change. And he did talk to PBS and say, I'm no longer that guy that was working with Zarqawi. Remember him. 1-866-408-7669. I'll take a timeout, come back and get some calls when we return. Also, Danny Penny being out. Not only is he not convicted, he is free. He's got to beat the civil trial. And it's going to be hard to do that because the threshold is so much less. But Jordan Neely, he was a schizophrenic who was on drugs and was threatening people. And Danny Penny stood up, spoke out, and actually took action. And for a while, his life's been on hold for 18 months. Now he's free. Why I believe that this not guilty plea is so much bigger than one Long Island Marine. Don't move.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
That is, of course, the incoming United States president, and I'm assuming future statue haver, Donald Trump, who this weekend was in Europe. Continuing the long American tradition of not waiting for the inauguration to become president and head overseas and meet with allies and remind everybody how f***ing weird he is about shaking hands. Top down, up down, bottom, side to side, grab it, hit me on the flippity, and how seamlessly Trump resumed his official duties of looking bored as s*** in meetings.
This is so dumb.
It is. John Stewart's pretty funny in the A block. Because John, you know, at one point he was meeting, I don't know who it was, maybe with Prince William. And he just was just laid out. He just looked like leaning to the side, like, oh, when is this going to be over?
He's like lounging in the couch.
Yeah, he was lounging. He was very comfortable. But, you know, he's not going to let Macron get the better of him on that handshake. And he's going to show strength.
I mean, his elbow is like up to his nose.
I know. Because, yeah, Macron's a lot shorter than him, too. Also, did you see how he just raved about how handsome Prince William is?
Better looking in person.
Unbelievable. He's a lot better looking in person. It's amazing. It's great.
I mean, what a backhanded compliment.
I know. But, I mean, I get that. How many times people say that, oh, you look so much better in person than TV? Than
Ryan,
radio.
You look so much thinner in person. Yeah, that's one of them. You're like, thanks.
Yeah, I'm like, I guess. I don't know. I'd rather, but it's better than that in reverse. Oh, on TV, you look so much better. That would probably be the...
That's when everyone only has, like, the best intentions, but it's very funny because they don't realize how it sounds.
Yes. There's probably not... Just don't comment. Just say hi.
You're just as handsome as I thought you would be.
That would be a good one.
Exactly.
I wouldn't mind that.
You're welcome.
All right, so that would be good. So the Daily Show, too, pointed out that nobody knows who's in charge. And we just talked to Ambassador Ford, and he couldn't really tell. You know, he told me more about this leader, Jelani, than I knew, that I've read anywhere, than people I've talked to, because he was the last ambassador. And he said, how many people that you know, how many al-Qaeda people, or bin Laden actually says, take my chemical weapons, I don't want them. How many times has bin Laden or anybody like that, Zarqawi, any of these leaders, al-Baghdadi, ever said, we're going to get along with all different religions and all different sects? It's never happened. So he could be totally putting us on. He says, we're not going to be a fundamentalist country. But he's actually saying it while dressed in a suit. So this could be the greatest acting job ever, and it could be just as bad as those people I mentioned. But so far, you just have to note that he's saying all the right things that would might possibly bring Syria together. And now there's a huge line of people heading back to the country, which is good news for the entire region, because when they had the unrest extended and fomented by Russia and Iran, it caused a massive refugee crisis, which pressured countries like Jordan, who can't afford to put another mini country right at their border. So the Daily Show, listen to Jelani. You know, in fact, I'll play it again. This is what he said on why you should believe him that he's not a terrorist anymore. Cut 21.
You've gone through quite the transformation once an al-Qaeda leader, and now you are projecting this image of a moderate leader and a moderate group.
I believe that everyone in life goes through phases and experiences, and these experiences naturally increase a person's awareness. A person in their 20s will have a different personality than someone in their 30s or 40s.
I get it. Who amongst us hasn't gone through an emo phase or a goth phase or a 9/11 phase? You know. You know how kids are. I don't like jihad anymore, Dad. I'm into horses.
Right. Pretty funny. He did a whole thing on the statues. Because, of course, in the Middle East especially, you can't really have a change without ripping down the statue of the leader that either murdered, jailed, or forced into exile. And that's what they were doing. And they don't make statues like they used to. So that's who we're going to find out what's going to happen in that area. And the reason why people say, well, who cares about Syria? It's all related. If we're going to not get involved in the Middle East, Iran is the problem. They've been really hurt by this. They've been hurt by Israel. They are wide open. They have proven to be a total paper tiger. And what they're doing, that we should noteworthy, though, they are rushing to get a nuclear program together to keep their enemies at bay. Remember, Saddam Hussein told, and they're doing a movie on this right now. In fact, the guy that's is trying to produce my movie, Thomas Jefferson's Tripoli Pirates, is doing a movie on the FBI agent that was spent all this time with Saddam Hussein. During that time after he was captured and then eventually killed. And one thing Saddam Hussein said is that he knew that Iran, if they knew he didn't have nuclear weapons, they would invade again because they had weapons of mass destruction. So he put on this great act like he had weapons of mass destruction, and it was predominantly to keep his enemies at bay. Now Iran has been exposed as to be a paper tiger. They don't have rockets. They don't have missiles. They don't have a good army. Now they don't have proxies. Now they don't have missile defense. And now their radar's been destroyed in Iraq. I mean, if you could diminish Iran and you could start starving them by not letting them sell their oil, 91% of which goes to China, that would also diminish their influence in Iraq. Iraq is dying to be free of Iranian militia influence. And the only way to do that is to start starving the mainland, and that'll force a lot of these others, unfinanced, unpaid, to go back home. I mean, that's in theory, which could happen. Keep your fingers crossed that it will. Here's General H.R. McMaster, Cut 18.
There's a huge opportunity at this moment, Shannon, because of really what the Israelis have done to crush Hezbollah, you know, with these recent attacks. Now you see how reliant Assad was in Syria on Hezbollah. The Assad regime is collapsing. And I think what you're seeing is those external arms, those terrorist arms of Iran, really countered in such a way that it creates a huge opportunity. Iran, I believe, has always been very weak. We act, you know, we act like they're strong and have all this sort of language about de-escalation. But I think President Trump understands. He used to say to me, you know, everywhere I look in the, where there's a problem in the Middle East, there's Iran. You know, and he's right about that.
Right. He is right about that. So I want to bring up the transition time. And yesterday on Capitol Hill, Tulsi Gabbard was there. Kristi Noem's going up today. Pete Hegseth is working every single senator that he can. And he's making some great progress, especially with Joni Ernst and some other private super PACs that are helping him out, that are pro soldier, because he wants to bring the war fighters under the spotlight, because they've not been getting enough attention from rules of engagement to health care needs. So he's bringing that forward. Here he is talking last night to Sean Hannity about how much progress he's making with Joni Ernst. Cut 27.
It was a great meeting. People don't really know this. I've known Senator Ernst for over 10 years. I knew her when she was a state senator running to be the first female combat veteran, and we supported her in that effort and have continued to, because you get into these meetings and you get to listen to senators. It's an amazing advice and consent process. And you hear how thoughtful, serious, substantive they are on these key issues as they pertain to our Defense Department. And Joni Ernst is front and center on that. So able to have phone calls and meetings time and time again to talk over the issues is really, really important. And the fact that she's willing to support me through this process means a lot.
Right. She hasn't said I'm definitely voting for him. He says he's looking to move forward, looking for the nomination, looking for the hearings. And that'll be good. Focus on what his belief is in combat, what his background is, how he's going to revamp the Pentagon, how he's going to work with his assistant Secretary of Defense. Those are the issues where Pete will shine. I think Tulsi Gabbard's another one's going to come on strong. She's impossible not to be impressed with when you meet her one-on-one.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade moving at rapid pace. I mean, two major stories happened yesterday around this time. We got the Dandy Penny case, got not guilty, and then we find the killer of the healthcare CEO. After tracking that case pretty much for the same amount of time, well, Dandy Penny was a year and a half, but we only got the case when it went to the jury. That's when the clock started ticking on it. So there's a lot going on heading into Christmas. A lot of people are in that mode, but you can't do that yet. Too much to do. In fact, Varney and Company will do a simulcast. You'll finally get to see what I look like. I'll be on Gutfeld tonight. Last night I was on The Five. Tomorrow I'll be on Brett Baer's panel. I got to pick out an outfit, mental note. And then Eli Beard's going to be with us, founder and president of Friends of United Hatzla, and that is Israel's largest all-volunteer emergency medical response team. Things have really turned around in Israel, even though they're in a situation where they're still fighting in Gaza and still rocketing infrequently, but still getting rocketed from Lebanon as well as Yemen. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
While she didn't say she'd vote for him, Ernst did say she would support him through the process. Other Trump nominees making the rounds on Capitol Hill include Tulsi Gabbard, Trump's pick to serve as Director of National Intelligence, who's faced questions in the past about a 2017 visit to Syria to meet Bashar al-Assad, and Kash Patel, his choice to lead the FBI.
Yep, that was CBS talking about the Trump nominations. They are on the march on Capitol Hill and heading in the right direction. We look at the surging Pete and Cash, meaning Hegseth, and gains Tulsi made yesterday.
Number two.
It is good that Assad is gone, but it clearly leaves a vacuum, and our jury is out on this group, HTS, and its leader, Jelani, which is a declared terrorist. President Trump and our team are watching very closely.
Yep, that is Mike Waltz, the incoming National Security Advisor, Middle East erupts in Central Asia as Central Syria, as Sunni extremist group seems to be in charge of that country. Maybe it'll never be one country again. The butcher Assad scrambles to Russia, while all our enemies seem to be losers in this: Iran, Russia, China, and North Korea. And could this mean that Trump, when he takes over, might have a stronger hand? We'll see.
Number one.
This kid came from a very privileged, wealthy background. I mean, he went to University of Pennsylvania. He graduated number one in his private school class, valedictorian in high school. What was the grievance that he had? Clearly, he has a problem with corporate America.
Yep, and that is very true. Nicole Parker, FBI agent. Richie Rich, Ivy League, wealthy kid, captured in Altoona, Pennsylvania, after the murder of HCC healthcare CEO Brian Thompson. We pieced together the bizarre journey from the valedictorian in high school to the murderer in his 20s. He'll never see the light of day again if there's any justice in the world. Clearly, it's him. He had a manifesto on him. One was written in hand, and it was about 3 pages long. Talked about how bad corporate America is. Talked about how bad healthcare is. My sense is, judging by the way he could make these 3D guns, by the way he had planned and must have stalked this healthcare CEO, there might have been others. I mean, I think he was going to hit, go to Pennsylvania. Maybe there would have been others. Immediately in the healthcare industry, all these executives are taking their name down. You know, if you click on most of these companies now, you're not even going to see who's in charge. Do you blame them? I absolutely do not blame them. But then you find this guy. His name is Luigi Mangione. He's 26 years old. He went to a private school over in Pennsylvania. His family's extremely rich. They own country clubs and nursing homes. They're independently wealthy. The guy's got a bachelor's degree from the University of Pennsylvania, engineering and computer science. Then he's got a master's in the same thing. And obviously, something went wrong when he goes to surf over in Hawaii. Reports is he hurt his back so bad he can barely function. It's got metal in there, according to some x-rays he posted online. Matt make excuses, just telling you, little by little, he started to lose touch with his friends and family. And he started doing his own thing. And that own thing is to plot and plan a murder and actually pull it off, do the shooting and be out of New York within 45 minutes. According to one friend, they posted different things online on his website where he has nutrition up there and other things that he's interested in, like workouts. On social media, one post said this: "Hey, man, I need you to call me. I don't know if you are okay or just in another super isolated place, but I haven't heard from you in months." This is what his buddy wrote on X. "You made commitments to me for my wedding, and if you can't honor them, I need to know so I can plan accordingly." So obviously this isn't a one-off. Obviously they lost touch. Evidently, to get into the complex he was in originally in Hawaii, he had to go through a thorough background check and pledge to be better as a person, all these deep-seated things. And he did, and he made some great friends. He went back, came back again, and stayed someplace else. Wasn't really returning anybody else's texts. He seems to have loved the Unabomber. He said he had the blank to recognize peaceful protests have gotten us absolutely nowhere. And at the end of the day, he's probably right. When all other forms of communications fail, violence is necessary to survive. You may not like his methods, but to see things from his perspective, it's not terrorism, it's war and revolution. Obviously, he signed on to the Unabomber's manifesto because that's what he had talked about. Also, somebody was known as extremely bright. The other thing, and I think you think it's minor, I think it's major, we got to stop with the masks. The reason why this guy almost got away with this, or at least was able to stay at large even longer, is he wore the mask, and we accepted, oh, just that guy or that woman must have a cold, or that woman might have surgery or going through chemo, or just be a little paranoid, no big deal. Before the pandemic, you'd go, what's with that person sitting in that cab with a mask on? But now, Mary Eric Adams says, look, we got to go back to getting rid of these masks. Cut three.
We call to say, when you go into businesses and establishment, ask people to temporarily remove their mask. We can close these cases in hours when if everyone will cooperate and just say, temporarily pull down your mask. You don't have to permanently take it off. But once you get that video, once you get that picture, then you are in a good place. And we're going to ask our Uber, Lyft, taxis, all of them to act the same. We had a ban in place, and it was removed after COVID. I think we need to reexamine having that put back in place.
Yeah, 100%. And the thing is, that's all we saw was his different masks. When he put it down to smile at somebody at that hostel, which is like a affordable housing complex, you saw his face. And we got a better look at who he was, but you could only see a side shot because of the hood. So it just would make it easier. You got 60,000 cameras in New York City. It was amazing the way they were able to track it down, find him in a cab, find him peering through the window and getting a better look at him. But it shouldn't have been that hard. I don't love the surveillance state, but when somebody becomes a killer and you want to track them down, it kind of works. If we're always going to be a terror target in New York City, I'd like to know that if we get the terrorists, if there, someone does try to take out a building again or people, that we'd be able to catch up to that person. And lastly, just a quick note on the transition team. Pete Hegseth's made tremendous progress by all accounts. It's going to come down to what he plans on doing. I think he says, I welcome the FBI background check. I think it would be great. Back to that, too. It would also help the Trump team do the background check before you nominate. You might want to try that, although he lost a lot of trust in the FBI, and you can understand that. I thought Tulsi Gabbard seems to impress all these senators when they're one-on-one. Remember, the former Democrat ran for president as a Democrat. A lot of this stuff is the first time they're meeting as she tries to be DNI'd. Kristi Noem today, she's got to tell everyone, even though a landlocked state, that she's someone that can run HHS, Homeland Security. It's a huge organization, a lot bigger than South Dakota. And lastly, I think it's important to soon see RFK Jr. He's got to go singing his song and defining his beliefs, talking about how he's different from 15 years ago when he might have had some issues, talk about where environment fits in with what he knows about health care and nutrition. Already some changes are made, and I love this. Arizona's Carrie Lake, top contender to become Donald Trump's ambassador to Mexico. That's a key position, and she is tough and understands the border. I like it. When we come back, John Reed joins us, host of Richmond's Morning News, one of our great affiliates on AM 1140 WRVA, extremely talented. John Reed's coming in here, and then Eli Beer will tell us what's going on as there's a pause, a 60-day pause in the fighting with Hezbollah, but it rages on with Hamas. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
What about failure to prosecute or investigate the Black Lives Matter organizer, Newsom? In the courtroom, in front of people, he said the following, turning to Penny, it's a small world, buddy. And several people in the courtroom gasped. That was at the very least a veiled threat of violence. If I'm Penny, I got to get myself protection at this point. He is threatening to kill and to choke and to strangle Penny, why is there no investigation and prosecution of the head of Black Lives Matter is guilty of incitement and of threats, and the district attorney is guilty of unethical, immoral conduct, and there ought to be consequences.
Yep, and that was, of course, Alan Dershowitz talking about after the verdict was read and Danny Penny's jury found him not guilty. You had Hawk Newsom, who's head of the New York chapter of the disgraced organization Black Lives Matter, looked over and says, it's a small world, buddy, essentially saying, watch your back. I heard threats like that in the street, too. The guy's a hero to most of New York, but not all of New York. For those people who wanted to find race in it, is because that's what the prosecution tried, and that's why Alvin Bragg brought the case. But it just isn't there, in my view. John Reed joins us now. He's a great. He's our great affiliate, WRVA. Huge talent, and John Reed is now in studio in New York. What brings you to New York, John?
Well, I had a speech last night at this thing called the Monday Meeting. Once a month, these conservative influencers and activists and big donors get together. So I was talking about the effort to beat back the Marxist purge of art and statuary, right, digging up bones from people just because we have decided we hate them 150 years later. A lot of that happened in Richmond and across Virginia. And so
they
trying
took
to push
Jefferson
back
out of the city wall.
Yeah, Jefferson out. City. They're trying to take Washington out
they
of Chicago.
They took Teddy Roosevelt out of Museum of
Right. You all have been touched by it, too. And as Donald Trump predicted, They're coming for the founding fathers, not so much about them, but to discredit everything they did to set up America. I mean, I sound like a conspiracy theorist because I guess I am. There is a movement afoot in this country to undermine everything that has made us successful.
But I do think there's a huge pushback now. And I think the Danny Petty trial, in my view, maybe it's your hope, but I think it's more than that. When you see Gascon get ousted with 30% of the vote, see Chesa Boudin, another DA that was just recalled and thrown to the street, and then Kim Fox's history, and now you have Alvin Bragg. Come on. Yeah. This is embarrassing for him to bring this case and for Penny to walk out like he should have.
This is the stuff that's actually going to touch the average person who doesn't want to deal with politics. Your money and your safety. Can you let your wife walk down the street, your daughter, your son, go into Midtown Manhattan, hop on the subway, and you're confident that they're going to show up at home without a conflict, or are you worried? Can you afford your basic groceries? And the fact that the Democrats still don't seem to want to acknowledge they've screwed things up with their crime reform policies, which are anything but, and the bad economic results that they've delivered.
And you're considering running, too, in Virginia, right?
I'm getting close, man. I got a couple more things to calculate. But
for lieutenant governor.
For lieutenant governor. Winsome Sears, it appears, will be the Republican nominee for governor. Jason Mears has made the decision to run again for attorney general. So the one spot that's open is LG.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a historic ticket. And what's the one thing that everybody says about Republicans, the people who hate us? You're homophobic, you're racist, you're xenophobic. Well, you know what? They're not going to play that with me. I'm a gay guy who's a solid conservative, worked for Ronald Reagan, worked for Senator George Allen. I think my bona fides speak for themselves.
Well, you're on the air, too. People know exactly how you feel.
Yeah, every day I get the chance to push back on this stuff. And I'm hoping that that will translate into people saying, hey, maybe this is the articulate guy who can speak on our behalf and win over some of the people who've written us off in the past.
You know what's so interesting is like not many people thought that Tulsi Gabbard, who was running for president as a Democrat, would be up as a key figure with Donald Trump's administration. Not many people thought that Elon Musk, who was tight with Obama, who Obama's the one who said, hey, we want to go the privatize space travel, and we're going to have Elon Musk take the lead. Not many people thought that would be the person allied with Donald Trump. Do you get the sense that things are blurring? When you had your meeting yesterday, do you get the sense that there's no hard and fast Republican and Democrat these days?
Oh, I think there are a lot of Democrats who are looking for a new home because that party has gone to the extremes. I mean, with the trans mutilation issue.
Why would he stay in Massachusetts as a Republican, a Democrat? They're trying to primary him right now for saying he doesn't think the trans athletes should be playing against his daughters in sports.
The purge has been real, and we've seen it in Virginia. The Democrats are very vicious. If you don't toe the line on everything, you're out. And so I think that these last results, even though Donald Trump didn't pull off the win in Virginia that we were hoping for, he narrowed it.
How close was it? Could you remind me?
I think we were down to four. I think it was four instead of 10. It was either six or four. It wasn't what we were hoping for. But if you look at the heat map of Virginia, the numbers of votes across the state outside of Northern Virginia and some of the urban areas that shifted Republican is pretty significant. And of course, we know Glenn Youngkin pulled off a miracle 4 years ago when he got elected governor. And I think people still like him. They like responsible, reasonable, thoughtful, conservative leadership. We've delivered. Our party has delivered. Glenn Youngkin has delivered. And I think there's a case to be made for continuing on that trajectory as the Democrats double and triple down on insanity and failure.
You know, it's interesting. I found out that they're still trying to collect all the votes. For some reason, in California, having trouble adding.
Yeah, what's that about?
So they are finding that one of the main gains that Trump had was with labor, with unions.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, Joe Biden won by 16. Harris had an 8-point advantage. How do you explain that? And how does that affect if you run? What do you say to working class people that they care about?
I think working class people realize that the Democrat economic policies are crushing them. You know, this is not the former Democrat Party that was really worried about making sure that employees and workers in mines and in factories were taken care of, that they had a good wage and that they were protected. Now it's become something much more nefarious, and union workers are probably not going to go for a system which has already demonstrated that's going to provide them with fewer options for jobs. You want to be able to walk out on somebody if you think they're screwing you over. And I think they're seeing that the options are diminishing under Democrats and they're expanding under Republicans.
So, okay, inflation's too high. If you're Kathy Hochul, how do you handle that? We're going to take taxpayer money and start mailing them $500. So if you make $150,000, you're getting $500 for your family. You become ineligible at $300,000. Is that the way, John Reed, to solve inflation, take taxpayer money and mail it back?
It's insanity. It's
while
unfair.
You're in deficit.
It's unfair to the people who are paying into the system, and it doesn't solve anything. It actually makes things worse, harder to come back from. In my hometown, in Richmond, the state capital of Virginia, the Democrat mayor, who may be potentially my opponent for lieutenant governor, has just proposed $600 for, I think, 6 months to help people pay their rent and pay their mortgage. And I'm thinking, does that accomplish anything? What are they going to do when the 6 months is out? You've just burned through millions of dollars. You
no
haven't
plan.
Solved the problem. It's almost the kind of thing you do right before an election if you're a cynical idiot.
John Reeves, great to see you. Thanks so much for coming in. I'm glad
hey,
you had
you.
A speech here that brought you to New York. And best of luck when you make your decision
I appreciate
on
it.
Running for deputy governor of Virginia.
Exciting,
although you'd
man.
Be missed in the lineup if that is the case.
I appreciate it. I'm
maybe
glad to
see you.
Maybe
you can do both. I'll make a few
if
calls.
If I could figure it out, I would. Thank
back
you.
In a moment.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Equally, we send a hand of peace to all those beyond our border in Syria, to the Druze, to the Kurds, to the Christians and to the Muslims who want to live in peace with Israel. We're going to follow events very carefully. If we can establish neighborly relations and a peaceful relations with the new forces emerging in Syria, that's our desire. But if we do not, we'll do whatever it takes to defend the state of Israel and the border of Israel.
And they're used to it. They have used to having enemies on all sides, but things have, I think, it's going to break their way. How could it be worse than Assad? Yeah, unrest could be a problem. Refugees could be an issue. But there's already been a mass refugee exodus from there. And already we understand the Israelis have moved up in the Golan Heights to secure that demilitarized zone because all bets are off when Assad scrambles over to Moscow, where it will be his new home. You and Edward Snowden will share bunk beds. We'll have to see how that goes. It's not going to be a palace, I'll tell you that. Barney and Company in about 10 minutes will bring up the most intriguing place in the world right now, and certainly the hottest of hotspots is Syria. Eli Beer is over in Israel. He's the founder and president of United Hatzalah, Inc. It's Israel's largest all-volunteer emergency medical response organization, and his son is actually fighting with the IDF right now. Eli, welcome back.
Thank you. Great being in your show.
Hey, Eli, first off, your take on what the unrest in Syria means for Israel.
Well, no one really knows, but I'm feeling good about it. I actually feel like, Syria was a very, very important part of Iran's success in hurting Israel for so long. They were the ones who were exporting all the weapons that were coming to Syria for Hezbollah. They were really the logistics center of Iran for Hezbollah. I would say tens of thousands of missiles would be going through Syria. So I think the fact that these rebels hate Iran, which is amazing, would not allow Hezbollah to get armed again. So that's a really big success in that term. I don't know what's going to be with ISIS and all the rest of the groups. You know, maybe something will happen and they will decide, you know, they got Syria, that's enough for them. But Israel's ready anyways. You know, we have to get ready for anything.
That is true. Right now, we understand that there's been multiple bombing runs into Syria to kind of destroy their chemical weapons, which they say they don't want chemical weapons. You could come take them.
Well, Assad was an evil man, and he was fed by Iran. Iran kept him alive just for having like a center of weapons for hurting Israel, and they gave him a lot of ability to create these weapons, these chemical, biological weapons. And now Israel has to make sure that these people who are now controlling Syria don't have their hands on it. But besides for that, Israel had to destroy all their Navy and Air Force capability. So right now, I don't think there is one airplane left in Syria that's capable to fly, and no naval, they don't have anything left for, you know, big weapons so they could use against us.
So when you find out that if Iran can't use Syria to ferry weapons, to ship weapons into Hezbollah, what does that do, into Lebanon, to Hezbollah, what does that do? How will they go around it if they can't get through Syria?
I would say this is almost a death situation for Hezbollah. You know, they have no other way to go in with all their supplies that they need for fighting and rebuilding their capability to fight against Israel. This is unbelievable what was done in last year, led by Netanyahu, for fighting Hezbollah in a very, very smart way, killing Nasrallah and all the generals there. Iran, they didn't bet right. When they went to war against Israel, using their proxies, using Iran, using Hezbollah, using Syria, and all these other proxies, they didn't imagine one day they will be left with nothing. They have Hezbollah is almost completely gone, and now Syria is over, and Iran is left with the two most important assets on the border of Israel. They were planning to go from Lebanon into Jordan. That was their big plan, to surround Israel with Iranian forces taking over Jordan. They had Lebanon. They had Syria. They had Gaza. And they just wanted to choke Israel. And thank God, it's a miracle what happened.
So here's what Aaron Cohen says. He's former Israeli special operator and told us last night, cut 15.
It 100% weakens Iran. I'll tell you why. Reducing that proxy tentacle, which is what Iran and Russia impose, and what they basically built in Syria, this is going to open up supply lines for the IDF. By the way, Trace, the IDF just recently pushed armor into Syria for the first time since 73.
Into the Golan Heights.
Into the Golan Heights in 50 years. And they're creating and carving out a buffer zone because of that weakened Iranian influence. Now, in Israel is blitzing on targets to dismantle jets, remaining supply lines, chemical depots. Israel's having a field day. Bibi's 100% right.
So, I mean, it doesn't happen if you don't ignore the U.S., Joe Biden, and just take out and decapitate Hezbollah. Is that correct? Because Hezbollah would have come to Assad's aid.
I am so happy that we had a prime minister in Israel, and we have a prime minister in Israel, who said the concern of the security of our people more important than what you want us to do because of your political situation. Israel had a prime minister who said no to Biden. When Biden said, do not go into Rafah, do not go in here, do not go here, stop the war here, stop the war. And our prime minister and the government said, we need to do what we need to do to protect our people. And look what's happening. Iran, which was the devil of our generation, Iran is literally the Hitler, the Nazis of our generation. And they wanted to control the Middle East and go back, and then continue to Europe and continue to the United States, Canada. Iran is stopped now. And hopefully now that the new administration will come in, we will take care of the main problem. The main problem, and I said this before, is Iran. And we need to take care of them and make peace in the Middle East. This is our opportunity. Iran is not only the enemy of Israel and the West and America and Europe. Iran is the enemy of their own cousins, the Arabs, living in Saudi Arabia and Emirates and other countries. They were a threat to all of us. And now that the new administration comes in, there is no doubt that we need to take care of the problem and bring peace to the Middle East, real peace. And that will be peace for us living in Israel, for us visiting Israel, and for the Europeans and for America.
Have Israelis started moving back into the north with the 60-day ceasefire in place?
It's funny. One of my closest friends, I asked him, where are you? He says, I just rented a bungalow up in the Golan Heights. I said, you out of your mind? He said, it's beautiful here. It's empty. No one's here. And it's so cheap. People, Israelis realize, you know, better times are coming now. And people are coming back up north. It's going to take a lot of rehabilitation. To rebuild the place is going to take time because they destroyed a lot of the cities up north. People didn't even realize. We have over 100,000 Jewish refugees in the center of Israel who were not living in their homes for over a year. And a lot of their homes were blown up by Hezbollah. going to take time and a lot of money, but Israelis are happy about the situation. They're visiting, and hopefully we're going to go skiing soon on the Mount of Hermon. It's not like Nevada. It's not like, you know, like the skiings that you have here in America. You know, you have beautiful ski resorts, but it's beautiful to visit the Hermon, which is the tallest mountain up in the Golan. And now we have another one. We have the mountain right next to it, which was under control of Syria. And that is very, very important for Israel's security. And I hope Donald Trump recognizes it as part of the Golan Heights.
What's the latest in Gaza? Word is it just seems as though there are some progress being made now on the urging of the Trump administration. Qatar is now trying to broker some type of agreement. There's reason a little bit for hope on a hostage release. I know you've been down that road before, but what do you hear on the ground?
Look, I tell you, I'm personally embedded in this. I have a volunteer of United Hatzalah, Bar Cooperstein, who is saving lives. He's a United Hatzalah volunteer. He was on October 7th in the Nova Party. He was kidnapped. But I really hope that the way we bring them back is through a powerful way and not giving up to terrorism. We need to make sure now that we have everyone's aligned with us and with the government, we bring every single hostage back alive, or the ones who are unfortunately not alive. We bring them back to Israel, and we take care of this problem once and for all. We need to make sure that we will never have a hostage situation again, and we should not pay the prices that Hamas were trying to get for a long time. Now they're almost defeated. They don't have Hezbollah helping them anymore. They have very little help from Iran now. We need to make sure that this is an opportunity now to put a lot of pressure, not on Israel like it was, to put pressure on Hamas and to tell them that if you don't release the hostages now, all of them, you will have hell. You and your families will have hell.
Eli Beer, thanks so much. Hope your family stays safe. Thanks for the update on the hottest region in the world. When we come back, Stuart Varney, simulcast, and then we'll finish up with your phone calls on the back end. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Now, The Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney and Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
All right. By the way, yeah, Stuart Varney, he's celebrating a big anniversary. I think it's 10 years, anniversary of 10 years of his show, because he's been brilliant at it. I remember he told me, you know, he was doing a show, was doing great, but they put his name on this. He says, when they put your name on a show, it becomes much more personal. So Varney and Company, that's what they did. So he's going to be with us shortly, and we're going to hear from him, and he's going to come on with us. We're going to be talking about what's happened with the Penny trial. Also have an idea of some of the meltdown on the left because they have no leader. Let's listen.
It is okay. Only Apple is on the downside, just 46 cents. That's it. 10:51, Kilmeade time, and here he is. Brian, I just want you to listen to Black Lives Matter and what they were saying outside the courthouse yesterday, calling for violence. Roll it.
Just like everybody else has vigilantes, we need some black vigilantes.
That's right.
People want to jump up and choke us and kill us for being loud. How about we do the same when they attempt to oppress us?
Right.
I'm tired.
These wonderful white people, I hope they celebrate their Christmas while the Neely family is praying and asking God for comfort. Them and America.
All right. You heard it, Brian. What's your reaction?
I don't even believe they mean what they're saying. They know race has nothing to do with this. Choke us. They're trying to tap into George Floyd from 4 years ago. Yep. America understands. And by the way, why would anyone have Black Lives Matter on their business card or their title? They're a disgraced organization. I would like to, if you want to scare Black Lives Matter, show up with an accountant. Because so many corporations gave them billions of dollars. It is all gone, and no one's running the place. And then he shows up to a trial that has nothing to do with race, except for if your name is Alvin Bragg and let yourself be pressured into it to do something you can't sincerely believe, when this was a guy standing up to a deranged individual who's schizophrenic, that's been arrested 70 times and not detained, and he stood up and did the right thing. But everybody watching us knows it, and even Hawk Newsom, who sit there and got some camera time, doesn't believe a word he's saying. Alan Dershowitz said, listen, if I'm Danny Penny, I got to get myself some security because you got to worry about it. And I agree. If you're Danny Penny, you got to, he said, look over your shoulder, right? And right in the courtroom, he heard threats to him in the courtroom. So I think he does, so he doesn't have to get himself in trouble again, stand up for himself to maybe get some security. But it's just unbelievable. This was not a race case. I believe the American people are fed up, and I think this is the beginning of the end of the woke DAs.
Yes. It's the beginning of the end of the woke DAs. They've already gone in San Francisco, gone in Los Angeles. It's a matter of time before, hopefully, they're gone in New York City as well. Let me move on to this. The hosts of The View, they're fighting again, this time over whether they should panic about Donald Trump. Watch.
Whatever he's going to do, he's going to do. But do take our word for it. Things seem to move slowly.
Yeah, I told you last week I disagree with you when you say that. Because because we have the luxury of saying that because we're legal. We are successful. We are. But if you're an illegal immigrant in this country, you're not going to be not in a panic.
Well, you tell people to stay fraught and like this.
I'm telling people to prepare, Whoopi.
Do you think they're not prepared?
Well, that's a genuine fight right there. Brian, even Whoopi is shutting down Navarro's fear-mongering.
Absolutely, because 53% of the country want mass deportation. I'm sure 97% of the country want the criminals sent out, starting with the gang members. By the time they get to people that are here, that have snuck in here, had a child here, and have to decide if they're going to go back and leave the kid here, before we get that, it's going to be a couple of years and a few billion dollars. So she's saying, panic. And everybody else saying, no, we can't. And they're also saying that the reason why Joe Biden doesn't get another 4 years or Kamala Harris didn't beat Donald Trump, one of the main reasons is they voluntarily opened up the border and denied it was a problem, but the American people have too much common sense for that. And I think people are realizing that not only when you fearmonger, you're not winning over the Hispanic vote, it's sending more to the Republicans. And maybe Whoopi looked at the bar graph or the pie chart before the show and said, "This not only aren't we getting ratings, but we're not persuading anybody to our cause."
The times are a-changing, Brian. Good to have you on the show. We'll see you again real soon.
All right, Brian, go get him, Stuart. Thank you. Absolutely. The Hit Show over on the Fox Business Channel, 1-866-408-7669. A quick note before we take a look at what you have to say at BrianKilmeade.com and the phones. In Florida Theater, I want to see everybody at WOKV especially. I want to see you guys in person February 15th. It's coming up. We're already getting close to being sold out, so VIP opportunities remain. But what Stuart was talking about is so real. Democrats are fed up that Joe Biden has phoned it in and Kamala Harris has disappeared. Why? Because he goes ahead and does something extreme. Let's just use the term, generous term, controversial, and pardons his son. And what made it controversial, and we've been over this last week, is that he promised he wouldn't. He said it definitively over and over again and had people laud him for taking that firm moral stand against not pardoning your guilty son. And then he did it. But what made it worse, he went to Angola and disappeared and left the Democrats to pick up the pieces and defend it while trying to find a mission statement. Then he brought his press secretary with him. So she's humiliated as she comes home. And then they allow, and Donald Trump benefited, got invited by President Macron for the opening of the Notre Dame Cathedral. Joe Biden stayed home. He didn't have to stay home. You have to light the tree. You could have left your first lady home or your vice president to light the tree. But if you are a Catholic and this historic church was burned down and a lot of Americans like Salma Hayek's billionaire husband put millions into it, show up. Instead, Donald Trump takes over the spotlight. Donald Trump's tweets controlling the hostage situation over in Gaza is taking the initiative over with the collapse in Syria, except for a 10 a.m. press conference that Joe Biden had on Sunday, I think it was. Besides that, it's Donald Trump's agenda. Donald Trump's border czar is down to the border talking about what he's going to do. He's having interviews talking about where we're heading. Donald Trump is doing interviews on Meet the Press. And what you're seeing is Joe Biden disappear. Now, who cares, right? Well, who cares if you're a Democrat and you need some leadership, you have a little bit longer in the spotlight, you got judges got to be confirmed, you have things you want to put in place, you have an Inflation Reduction Act that needs to be spent. You need somebody out there, even if he's hurting like Joe Biden is. But that's Democrats' problem, isn't it?
From Hyatt top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Big hour coming your way. Consequential in every respect. Victoria Coates at the bottom of the hour, former Deputy National Security Advisor to President Donald Trump, Vice President of the Catherine and Shelby Coleman Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage, the author of The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. And man, I definitely see a way. That's going to be great. And James Trusty standing by, as I mentioned, a lot going on today, including got a president-elect that's busy and a president that's not. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
And while she didn't say she'd vote for him, Ernst did say she would support him through the process. Other Trump nominees making the rounds on Capitol Hill include Tulsi Gabbard, Trump's pick to serve as Director of National Intelligence, who's faced questions in the past about a 2017 visit to Syria to meet Bashar al-Assad, and Kash Patel, his choice to lead the FBI.
Well, now she doesn't have to worry about that. He's out of power. Trump nominations. Nominees on the march in Capitol Hill. We look at the surging support for Hegseth. He's back on the Hill today. Cash back on the Hill today. Tulsi back on the Hill, and so is Kristi Noem. Big day.
Number two.
It is good that Assad is gone, but it clearly leaves a vacuum, and our jury is out on this group, HTS, and its leader, Jelani, which is a declared terrorist. President Trump and our team are watching very closely.
That is true, Michael Waltz. Middle East eruption in central Syria as Sunni extremist group seems to be in charge, and the butcher of Syria scrambles to Russia. Why all our enemies seem to be losers here, how we could be a winner. We'll discuss it.
Number one.
This kid came from a very privileged, wealthy background. I mean, he went to University of Pennsylvania. He graduated number one in his private school class, valedictorian in high school. What was the grievance that he had? Clearly, he has a problem with corporate America.
Yep, perhaps. Nicole Parker, FBI investigator, Richie Rich, Ivy League, wealthy kid. Captured in Altoona, Pennsylvania, after the murder of the healthcare CEO. We piece together the bizarre journey from valedictorian to murderer and his twisted folk hero status. So he's looking at a lot of trouble. Obviously, he panicked when he was caught. He's not an experienced criminal. But although he did seem to plot and plan his murder, he's being charged now in New York for murder intention, loaded firearm, and two counts there, in possession of a forged instrument, and he's got five charges in Pennsylvania: forgery, firearms, tampering with records of identification, possessing instruments of crime, and false identification. Multiple examples. He wore a mask, took the mask off to eat. A alert McDonald's patron or worker called him up as soon as this rookie cop showed up. He was able to make the arrest. James Trusty joins us now, former federal prosecutor, attorney, former defense attorney for former President Donald Trump. And we're also going to talk about the Danny Penny situation. But, Jim, welcome back. Your thoughts about this 26-year-old who seemed to have everything going for him until he decided to kill.
Yeah, Brian, I mean, we really have some broken toys in our society. I mean, for a kid that had that much potential, he's an intelligent, good-looking kid. I haven't heard anything yet about any sort of kind of warped existence from his upbringing. So to get to a point where he's comfortable executing somebody in broad daylight and doing it in a way that was, I think, one of the reasons it caught all our attention, it was so brazen. You know, it was not a kid that was intent on getting away. This was no Eric Rudolph after the Olympics bombing, disappearing into the forest. This is a kid who left behind every type of evidence and still apparently had the gun with him when he was arrested. So, you know, he was never really trying to get away with this thing. And to me, it's just, you know, yet another sign that our schools and our colleges are cranking out young men that a lot of times have just really warped values.
I mean, he says he's a critic of corporate America. He's a critic of the healthcare business. He seems to be somewhat of a socialist. He loved the Unabomber, according to his postings. And it seems so, after back surgery, he seemed distant. I'm not sure if it's coincidence, but seemed distant from his friends and said he was in constant pain. I did have a reporter at the scene that hasn't been reported yet, but said there were pills everywhere at the site of the murder. But they have not. He did not find any medication on him at the time. So he's got a manifesto on it, at which time he talked about health care and this United Healthcare specifically. So I don't think they'll have any problem with conviction. The question is, what led somebody to believe that a bad back pain can be solved by prison time?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm getting to. It's kind of like the school shooting cases that we have across this country, where you scratch your head and you say, how did somebody get so depraved and so messed up internally that they think this is okay, to whether you're talking about a Sandy Hook or anywhere else? I mean, the warp of young men with talent, with ability, with brain power, to get to a point where they're comfortable engaging in just completely premeditated evil is a tough one. I mean, again, I don't think anybody has an easy answer, but he's kind of exhibit A right now.
I want you to hear what he sounded like as a valedictorian in high school. By the way, this evidently is a tough school to get into, let alone be the best at. Cut 7.
The people in our lives, especially our parents and teachers, have such huge roles as well. I'd like to personally thank each of you for sending your sons here, because I can't imagine the class of 2016 without any one of these men on stage. Further, thank you for all the time and love you've put into our lives. You've instilled values in us, fed and clothed us, and simply been there for us every step of the way.
Sounds like this kid's on his way. So he goes to the University of Pennsylvania, gets a bachelor's, stays there, gets his master's in computer science, and he gets it in engineering. And then somehow he got twisted. This guy, Chris Hansen, was on with Jesse last night and did some deep search into his background. Listen to what he came up with. Cut 10.
Along the way, he spends a summer in Stanford counseling incoming freshmen, on how to study AI. This guy had accomplished a lot. So where does he become radicalized? We know that he worked for an online digital automotive marketplace, another place called AppRoar, a gaming platform. He moves to Hawaii, where a year ago, we found out, he was arrested for criminal trespassing on public land. A year ago this week, he pleads guilty, pays a fine, and goes on his way. So what happens in the last year to get him from Hawaii, allegedly, if you believe everything we know so far, to this city to allegedly commit the crime we think he's committed?
Well, probably unwind it, but his family could also help with that. Does it bother you, Jim, that his family probably knows exactly who it is? We didn't hear a word from them.
Yeah, I mean, this kid is a distinctive-looking young man. And whether you blame the family or friends or people that he's met along the way, I mean, it really is kind of astounding. I was certain he was going to be arrested by Friday night. And I know, thankfully, we don't seem to think there's any other crimes that took place in the interim, but it was kind of amazing that it came down to his sloppiness and showing up at a McDonald's in Altoona that gets him arrested, as opposed to law enforcement being able to get the tips to track him down almost immediately. Now, we're a big country, and if he's on the road and he's keeping his head down for large parts of that, I suppose that explains a lot of it. But again, you know, to me, this is that you can call him being radicalized, and there's certainly a political bent to this whole thing. But it's also that intersection of criminality and mental health where, you know, it's not unusual for young men in their early 20s to start really manifesting whatever mental health problems they're going to have in life. And that's not to excuse it by a long shot, but there's going to be a lot of time, you know, to really come to understand this guy from his manifesto, from his social media, from people that might now start talking about his change over recent years into something that's more violent, more strident. But it's a sad story. I mean, there's a family man who you can hate big insurance all you want and healthcare, but there's a man who had no reason to be harmed at all that was executed in broad daylight by this young man who had a lot of potential to do good things in his life.
Yeah, but you don't like a company like the IRS is obviously not built to win over friends. So you're going to go shoot them. You don't like your banker because of 2008 or because of maybe the collapse of Bear Stearns. You're going to go shoot them. I mean, it's a bad trend. And yet this guy's treated in some circles like a hero, which is insane. But I want to move over to Danny Penny for you. I mean, Jim Trusty, am I to believe that you believe, like most Americans, this case should never have been brought? And when Alvin Bragg waited 10 days to bring it, he basically was forced to do it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the dirty story here. You know, not every single acquittal is a function of a bad faith prosecution. I was a prosecutor for 27 years. There's times where you take a hard case to trial or where witnesses go south on you. There can be all sorts of reasons why you try a case and eventually lose it. But this was a bad faith case. This was a political decision by a politicized, weaponized prosecutor in New York who listened to all of the clamor in the public and made a premature, wrong decision within 10 or 11 days to charge a very complicated matter. I mean, how do you not take the time to interview and really assess all of these other subway riders who were terrified by Jordan Neely when Daniel Penny stepped up and did what we really want young men to do in our society, which is to feel the call to protect others when it's necessary. So, yeah, I think that the dirty story out of all of this is not anything to besmirch the deceased or to suggest that Daniel Penny is somehow lucky that he got off. He shouldn't have been charged, and the focus should be on Alvin Bragg.
But Alvin Bragg, of course, he's got to be removed. In fact, the New York Post is calling for him to be removed right now, and the governor could actually do that. He was elected into office, really, as soon as he wins a primary, you win it here in New York City. But, I mean, the Gascones, the Chesa Bodines, this guy is not with the times. He's the defund the police attorney, DA, put there by George Soros' backing. But that ship has sailed, Jim. Are you hopeful like I am that the American people are showing a backlash towards this behavior?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, this is a nice reminder that, you know, after what we went through with President Trump, that New York juries can actually get it right sometimes. So I'm happy to see that the system worked in terms of the judicial component. But I think people are realizing across the country that progressive prosecutors is just code for politicized, weaponized, and it's not justice. It's not pursuing justice. It's pursuing a political agenda that tends to hurt the public they're supposed to serve. You look at Philadelphia and Nashville and St. Louis and L.A. and San Francisco and, of course, Alvin Bragg. And across the country, the Soros-funded progressive prosecutors fail at their job, their primary job of protecting the public.
Because they have a different intention. And plus, he tried to racialize this. He tried to make it a black man gets taken down by a white man. And how does that serve your community and your city? And that does nothing but fuel hatred. Thankfully, American people almost feel like they're past it. And, you know, lastly, you have Black Lives Matter in the middle of it. One of these guys, Hawk Newsom, says this is a small town. Watch your back. He says it in the courtroom so everybody can hear. What would you do if you were in the courtroom there and that was your client? He's threatening.
Well, I'd walk away from that client real quick.
You're representing Penny and you hear the threats go right to his face. Now he's got to go get a bodyguard?
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. You know, if you're on the wrong side of these polarized false narratives, somehow you have to spend the rest of your life truly looking over your shoulder. He probably didn't need to hear that to know that that's the new reality. You talk about Ferguson with the Michael Brown shooting. That police officer was cleared eventually and had to, like, look over his shoulder for the rest of his life. So, yeah, the stridence of politicized people like BLM folks announcing, you know, watch your back, small town, they ought to be dragged in before law enforcement right away. They ought to be charged with making threats or some form of assault or disturbance, to be something to say the system is not going to stand idly by and excuse that behavior any more than we would if it went the other way. If somebody came up and said terrible things to Jordan Neely's family after a conviction, we wouldn't tolerate it. We'd say this is outrageous speech and it needs to be stopped.
Yeah, I just hope he does resign. Lastly, Letitia James is not going to back off her civil suit on President Trump. They cost his company $454 million. He's appealing it, obviously. He's got a bond out there that they tried to contest. She wanted to sell off his property. She wanted that feeling right up until the election. She didn't get it. And now everything is boomeranged on her, and she stands over one of the few cases that is still standing. How do you approach it if you're Trump right now?
Well, I think you ignore it. I mean, look, you know,
so much money, though. I mean, nobody has $454 million laying around.
Well, Brian, I know you do, but I understand most people don't. It's a fair point. And look, it's an unjust verdict. It's a terrible situation, and he shouldn't have to pay a dime for a no-loss loan app case. I mean, the whole thing was an absurdity from the get-go, driven by a prosecutor who unethically announced she would get him. So I think the long run, what we're seeing with Lawfare is it is collapsing of its own weight. And I think that case, even with a New York appellate court that's going to be unpredictable, there's a real good chance that that thing falls apart over time. You just have to suffer through it for a while and hope that the first level appeal is where you win.
But the thing is, Jim, you know they got a monitor with it. I feel like I care more than they do. But they have a monitor to have to approve all his transactions. You know how humiliating that is?
Well, I think, you know, frankly, for a guy who has been in love with New York his whole life, it's got to be the most frustrating thing to be subjected to rules that no other New Yorker ever gets subjected to. And so I'm sure, you know, even though he's got a lot keeping him busy right now, it's a constant source of frustration to realize that he's going to have, you know, a reporting requirement. But again, just, you know, to me, hurry up and get the appeal going. Let's get this thing before the New York Court of Appeals and end it, because I think there's a decent chance it's certainly going to get cut, but it might get completely eliminated because it was such an inventive case to start with.
Thanks so much, Jim Trusty. Always great to get your expertise. Talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Brian. Good talking to you, man.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. Bottom of the hour, Victoria Coates. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The White House unveiled its Christmas decoration theme, A Season of Peace and Light, which is tough because Biden is always being told not to go towards the light.
President Biden traveled to Africa this week. Unfortunately, he said it was to visit the birthplace of his friend Barack.
It was pretty funny. They actually had a pretty funny joke with Pete, but you just have to have a sense of humor with it. Did you hear it?
I did. I didn't pull up. I can, if you think.
What do you think? I think that
I laughed at it, too, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, my key was Dawn laughed out loud on it. And she's the biggest Pete fan in the world. So I just thought that was pretty.
So then you knew it was OK that you could laugh like, too, okay, and play it on the air.
So I could say she's Pete's biggest supporter. And she thought it was funny. And I just thought maybe it'll be even. I know Pete will laugh at it after he gets the nomination.
Fair.
But if we get it, it would be kind of good.
No problem.
The other thing is I just wanted to bring up is what's going on with Kathy Hochul. She decides to up taxes, right? And says that, you know, you could leave if you want to, if people complain about the taxes, meaning rich people. But she also has done this to get inflation down. Look at what she pledges to do. Cut 34.
Here's what I'm proposing in my budget next month. They will send you a check to buy your groceries for a month or whatever you want to spend it on. And if you're an individual earning up to $150,000 a year, it's $300.
So think how idiotic this is. She has congestion pricing, which is going to taxing every working class person and who goes paycheck to paycheck. It's going to up the price of goods, up the price of the delivery, everything. It's going to do that. Oh, as compensation, I'll take your tax money and give you $300 of it back. How about just letting us have it to begin with? Although it's very nice of you to give it back to us and say you could spend however you want. Does she have an economist within shouting distance when she comes up with these, when she loads her teleprompter?
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
All right, we are back. And with me in studio is our privilege to have Victoria Coates, former Deputy National Security Director, Advisor for President Trump, and also now is with the Heritage Foundation, author of a brand new book, The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. And man, how appropriate is this? Victoria, great to see you.
Good to see you too, Brian.
I mean, perfect topic right now. And most people, you know, a lot of people in the Middle East, they roll their eyes. The average Americans, I got my hands full. I can't tackle the Middle East. It's been a problem since I was taking social studies in high school. But tell everyone why Syria is different now, what opportunity and traps are ahead.
Now, it's a critical time. And I always say about the book, I wish I didn't have to write it, but I'm glad I could get it done over the summer, because what it's based around four questions which apply to Syria, which is, how did this happen? You know, how did we wind up with Hamas people on the streets? You know, why Israel? What's the history of the relationship? Why should we care? Is there an alternative? Turns out there are two, the Palestinians and the Iranians, not a big success. And then finally, what's next? What can we do next? And that's really where Syria comes into play, where on the one hand, we get rid of Assad, a terrible dictator. But on the other hand, we're inviting in the TS people, and there's a reason President Trump put them on the terrorist list in 2018. So we've got to be very careful here.
Right. We have a guy. We have a guy that's now in charge that is at least saying the right things for somebody that he knows what the West wants to hear. His name is Abu Muhammad al-Jilani, who we put a $10 million price in his head. We thought he was al-Qaeda. Well, I'm talking to Ambassador Jordan from 2011 to 2014. He was ambassador to Syria. I think he's the last one. And he said that this guy, yeah, he's al-Qaeda. And now he's been fighting al-Qaeda, and he was fighting brutal battles with ISIS. And he's saying, I don't want chemical weapons, and I don't want revenge on the people that were in power unless you were part of the officer crew or part of the Assad family. He said, at the very least, he learned to say the right things. Bin Laden would never have said that. Zarqawi never would have said that.
No, absolutely. And a good important to remember, though, his name is Jilani because he's from the Golan Heights. And he was apparently radicalized in 2001 by the Second Intifada and the al-Qaeda attacks on the United States of 9/11. So, you know, I like what he's saying right now, but I think we do need to see proof of this. So I wouldn't race to take them off the designated terrorist list. I'd keep that pressure on them and let them know that if they step out of place, there are actually stronger sanctions we could put on them. So I think that's the way to handle them right
now. Here's him in his own words on PBS, Cut 21.
You've gone through quite the transformation once an al-Qaeda leader, and now you are projecting this image of a moderate leader and a moderate group.
I believe that everyone in life goes through phases and experiences, and these experiences naturally increase a person's awareness. A person in their 20s will have a different personality than someone in their 30s or 40s.
Okay. I know, Victoria, you're skeptical. But I'll take someone trying, and I'm not going to put my chips in with them yet.
No, 100%. And not all of us, Brian, go through an ISIS phase or an al-Qaeda
phase. Not yet.
Thank heavens. I know it's early yet. But, so I think we need to watch this very closely. The Israelis are watching it very closely. There's a reason they went in and took Mount Hermon, with the highest point overlooking Damascus, which they haven't held since 1973. So I think I would follow their guidance. They're the ones who have the strongest intelligence in the region and make sure that we're not unleashing a new jihadist threat, particularly against Israel.
But I firmly believe, and if you have it from yesterday, Eric, what Joe Biden said on Sunday, the shorter soundbite from yesterday. So on Sunday, Joe Biden came out and basically took a bow for this. And I found it relatively offensive. Okay, I want you to hear this. Cut 14.
For years, the main backers of Assad have been Iran, Hezbollah, and Russia. But over the last week, their support collapsed, all three of them, because all three of them are far weaker today than they were when I took office.
And he went on to say, because of the things he did. Really? He told them not to kill Nasrallah. He told them not to go in against Hezbollah. He told them not to go into Rafah. I mean, this all wouldn't have happened if Joe Biden, I think it was Grady went to visit right after the October 7th attacks. But since then, he's been slowly, covertly undermining them.
Absolutely. And that's one of the stories in the battle for the Jewish state, was the president going over on the 18th of October. Yes, a brave decision, a good decision. But he gets there and he gives this speech in which he cautions the Israelis not to be like the Americans after 9/11, when mistakes were made. Like, no, they weren't. If you remember, those of us who are old enough to actually remember 9/11, it took 6 weeks. And, you know, having worked for Secretary Rumsfeld, that was an agonizing period because everybody wanted something to happen. But they didn't have an attack plan for Afghanistan on the shelf that would have worked. So they took the time to do the planning the way Israel did. There were plenty of mistakes after that, but the actual invasion of Afghanistan was a massive success. That's something the Israelis should have imitated. Biden used that trip to try to excuse his own failures in Afghanistan. And that was when my antenna went up, that he was starting to politicize this. Even when he was doing something desirable, he was trying to use the situation. And the fact that he's letting Iran sell 1.75 million barrels a day of oil to China every day, and that's the money that's flowing to terrorism for Iran. And he says he's been striking mighty blows against the Islamic Republic. I don't believe it.
Yeah, I don't believe it at all. But anyone paying attention would believe you, because that's the fact. Now, 91% of Iran's sales go to China. Mm-hmm. So Trump comes in. What's he supposed to do about that?
Well, the good news is that the Trump-era sanctions on that Iranian oil are still in place, and we know how to enforce them. We spent a lot of time in the first Trump term.
Interdicting before they delivered to China?
Interdicting, putting secondary sanctions on, sanctioning the crews, sanctioning the people who give insurance to those ships, if they have insurance, finding them in, they're just these endless, like, little weedy things you can do to impede that. And, oh, also, you can make it stink for China and say, gee, China, if you keep doing this, you're going to run afoul of secondary sanctions, which means you can't process through the Federal Reserve. That's a problem for them. And so I think all of these ways are ways you can put the screws on Iran. We know that we can ramp up our domestic production to make up that shortfall. We took them down to 300,000 barrels a day, and nobody remembers the great oil shock of 2019 because it didn't happen.
Right. 67, 73, the Jewish state, 48, the Jewish state had to fight for its survival. How does October 7th line up with that?
I think it's really important because in each of those three wars that you name, there was a decisive Israeli victory. They won. They beat the Arab nations that attacked them. And after 73, they decided, the Arab nations decided, they really didn't enjoy that much. So they didn't do it again. And we got to a deal with Egypt in 79, Jordan in 94. But what the sort of mechanism was there was the Palestinians. And nobody told the Palestinians that they lost. And so they had the first intifada, the second intifada, these endless series of terrorist attacks, the Gaza war in 2014, 2021, and now finally October 7th of 2023. And I think, you know, what I have heard, I just got back from Israel yesterday from my Israeli counterparts, is they want to win and they want to declare victory. And then we can talk about what happens with the Palestinians. But trying to prop them up as a state when they're not has not been of service to the Palestinian people.
At this point, when people say a two-state solution is the answer, I mean, I almost laugh. What state are you talking about? You had Gaza. How did that go? You have the West Bank. How's that going? And you had an opportunity with the bridge to both, and you didn't take it. And Yasser Arafat basically said, yeah, if I took it, I'd be killed. So they don't want it. Their state, there's one state solution. Mm-hmm. They want the Israelis gone. But they have no right to that state. They don't even have historic right to that state. And there's no case to be made for that.
No, and they're not a state. They're a cause. And you know, this is kind of chapter three of the battle for the Jewish state, is how do you try to engage with a cause when the cause is the eradication of a very successful sovereign nation state that is a great friend and ally to the United States. It's not even apples and oranges. It's sharks and wheat. It's just so radically different. And so I think, you know, that's where President Trump was very successful in the first term, breaking that conventional wisdom. And when the Palestinians refused to negotiate, he said, fine, I'm going to go talk to the Arabs. And we got to the Abraham Accords. Because,
and by the way, stopped financing. The aid stopped, right? Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of what, again, seemed counter to conventional wisdom, that you had to keep the aid flowing or else they'd radicalize. Well, we didn't have October 7th under President Trump, and he cut off the aid in 2017-18 timeframe. The Biden folk turned it right back on, and hundreds of millions, over a billion now, U.S. taxpayer dollars flowed in to these Palestinian causes. And what did we get?
Tunnels.
Tunnels and attacks.
Tunnels, attacks, and weapons. And planning and, you know, plotting. They had deceptive rehearsals. Mm-hmm. They made it seem like they were training for one thing, but they were actually training for a relatively sophisticated attack that Israelis were not prepared for. But in the big picture, Victoria, and we can't take the big picture. By the way, Victoria Coates is here. Her book is out, The Battle for the Jewish State. October 7th is a horrific day. We got to get the hostages out. But when they do come out, hopefully most are left. I hear there's only about 40 when they are out. This was the most horrific miscalculation in Middle Eastern history, because the result is destroyed, decapitated Hezbollah, is on the cusp of destroying Hamas, and has now exposed Iran's radar missile defense, and they no longer have armed bodyguards on either side of Israel. And they lost Syria. I mean, think about this.
No, it is a great moment of opportunity, and I think this is where President Trump's leadership is going to be so welcome. I was in Israel when his Truth Social post about the hostages came out, and saying there would be hell to pay if they didn't all come out. And it wasn't bring them home. It was let them go.
Why do you like that?
because that is the clarity we have lacked for the last 14 months. President Biden has paid lip service to the hostages. At least he did at the beginning when they were letting some out. But suddenly they disappeared from the headlines and were left to languish. Hirsch Goldberg Poland, an American citizen, was executed point blank by a Hamas terrorist in a tunnel. We didn't do anything. There was barely even a statement.
So if it is January 20th and January 30th and February 5th and they're still not out, what does President Trump do? There's a danger there in doing what Obama did, not enforcing the red line, right?
No, but I think what he said in that statement was that there would be hell to pay. And when he says something like that, he's putting everything on the table and nothing on the table. And if I were Hamas, I would have a feeling of impending doom. You don't know what's coming. And it's the same kind of dynamic President Reagan set up in 1980, 1981, when he came in, and the Iranians immediately let those 52 American hostages that they had held for 444 days out the day of the inauguration, because right. They didn't want to find out.
So who was left in Hamas? And did you hear that Qatar has been asked by the Trump, Steve Witkoff, to start getting the talks going again? And they said, fine. And it looks like Hamas is sending a representative, and they're starting to move. What should be on the table? What do you hear? Because you were just there. Mm-hmm. What do you hear is left of Hamas?
There isn't much. And so that's the question, is if what's left just wants to try to save itself. And that's another tool that the Trump administration could use if they wanted to, was to hold all of the Hamas financing at risk, because all of that money that Hamas has is in banks in Turkey, in Qatar, in Egypt. And these are all partner governments for us. I know people have their various opinions on them, but they will listen to us. President Trump has a personal relationship with all three of those leaders. And if he calls and says, look, I'm going to have to sanction your bank if you don't freeze all those assets, I can tell you what they're going to do. And that's what Hamas cares about, these remaining stragglers, is their families and their money. They certainly don't care about the Palestinian people.
So is the ultimate move, which the ultra-right wing of Israel wants, and that's they just kick everybody out of Gaza and the West Bank, we'll just take it all? I mean, that's not going to fly either, will it?
No. And, I mean, that shouldn't be the conclusion. I think that, you know, if you look at the back of the book, one of the quotes I have there is from the pioneering Zionist Zev Jabotinsky, who wrote in 1923, you're a historian, Brian, you like this, that the Arabs will only make peace with the Israelis and accept them and get into real peace negotiations if they accept Israel's not going away. And that has to be the message to every Palestinian, be they Fatah, Hamas, the normal guy on the street. Israel's not going away. It's over. Now we can talk about it. Now we can talk about what's possible, so that kind of extreme solution doesn't have to happen.
True. And isn't that what the Abraham Accords was about? Isn't it Bahrain and Sudan and other countries?
Morocco, UAE.
Morocco, yeah, UAE. Aren't they saying we know they're not going away?
That is absolutely it. And what's more, where we really hit the sort of pivot point for those countries was when they looked around and they said, you know what? We don't want them to go away. They're actually our best friends against Iran. If you're in a foxhole, you want the Israelis right there beside you.
Didn't they just show the world that?
Mm-hmm. 100%.
I mean, blowing up, taking out the Hamas leader in Tehran, mm-hmm. at a funeral for the president whose helicopter crashed, taking him out. And then you have Sinwar being taken out. And then you have Hezbollah, which they thought was in. By the way, Hezbollah, I did not know this, hated in the region. They went from protecting Lebanon, they thought, to starting to interdict everywhere, including Africa. And now they're hated in the region. So people are cheering their demise.
Absolutely. And hopefully this is an opportunity for the beleaguered people of Lebanon, which include Christians, that includes Druze. Should be a beautiful country on the Mediterranean coast. They have natural gas resources, and they've just been eaten alive by Hezbollah, who, as you said, has not confined their violent mayhem to Lebanon, although they've certainly done enough there. Uh-huh. Remember, they're responsible for terrorist attacks in our hemisphere.
I know.
In Argentina. They may well be active here in the United States, having crept across the wide-open southern border. So, you know, this is a much more immediate problem for us here, which is why the subtitle to the book is Why Israel and America Can Win.
The battle for the Jewish state, how Israel and America can win. Victoria Coates, congratulations. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you, Brian. Anytime.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It was reported that in 2018, the mother of Pete Hegseth, Trump's nominee for defense secretary, sent her son an email saying that she was embarrassed by the way he repeatedly belittles, lies, cheats, and uses women for his own power and ego. To which Pete Hegseth responded, shut up.
They're just having fun with it. But that was Saturday Night Live on the Weekend Update. They were criticized heavily, but for making fun of the fact that the killer, who we only knew as a guy with eyes and eyebrows, was good looking, and everyone loved the fact that he killed a healthcare CEO. So a lot of people thought that was inappropriate. But Pete Hegseth has turned the corner. Tulsi Gabbard is impressing people one-on-one. Cash Patel seems to be the one who they say was controversial, but the more people talk to him, the more people look at his background, I don't think he's going to have a hard time. The problem is Christopher Wray's actually in that job. I don't know if you saw, though, Senator Grassley came out and said, Christopher Wray, pack your bags, you should go. The guy's 94 years old. He's so the opposite of a flamethrower or an ideologue. He's just the opposite, but he's frustrated about his four-year tenure. He doesn't want it to be six. He doesn't want it to be 10. Six. He doesn't want it to be eight. He doesn't want it to be 10. So I think that Christopher Wray would do a good job of resigning in the next 2 weeks because there's no sentiment there amongst Republicans to push back on Trump to shorten his tenure, which everybody knows you could fire a guy. So don't make him fire him. So we'll see. Okay, make sure you watch Gutfeld tonight. Tomorrow I'll be on Brett Baer. And then on Friday, I'm okay. And then, of course, One Nation on Saturday. Those would be the things. And don't forget, February 15th on History, Liberty, and Laughs, BrianKilmeade.com.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.